It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. Yes, it's true. Amazon, not Google, bought Twitch.tv for $1 billion. Jeff and I and Gina, too, will try to figure out why next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 264, recorded August 27th, 2014. Flinty Parsimony. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting caspersleep.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. And by Lantronics, maker of the X-Print server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Yeah, the Googleverse and all of that stuff, Facebook. I got schooled in Facebook. I'm going to talk about it in a second. But first, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jeffrey Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York. He's in his office right now on Times Square. He is the author of such great books as Public Parts, What Would Google Do?, Gutenberg the Geek, blogs at buzzmachine.com, and is the closest thing to a public intellectual in the United States we have.
Oh, don't put a target on my back. No, there's no such thing as a public intellectual.
There is in France.
Well, of course, it's France.
Yeah, but we don't really have that concept here, but... I think you are, though.
I don't even know. You know, I've never really fully understand what the hell that means.
It means, okay, well, let me first introduce Gina, and then I'll tell you what it means. Gina Trapani, she's a public nerd.
Yeah, not an intellectual.
Proud of it. No, you're brilliant. No, you are an intellectual, but you don't.
I'm a public simpleton.
You're a public nerd.
It's okay.
Public geek. She founded Life Hacker. Okay, that's just, you know, you could after that retire. But no, then she went on to do such great things as ThinkUp, ThinkUp.com. And who could ever forget the Google Wave Bible?
Oh, you can't. I got to get you. I really want to erase that part of your brain, Leah.
Do you have a box of them at home?
She has the Google Wave book has the right to be forgotten.
I did. When I set up my standing desk, I used the box of books that had never sold or done anything as my footrest. So they actually did come in handy.
In the movie Page One, David Carr and Brian Stelter and company about the New York Times, you see the copy of What Would Google Do, which David Carr uses only as a wrist rest.
Oh, that's so mean. Yeah. Oh, that's like almost intentional dig.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Yeah,
but
I'm
that's
sure
what happens when you're a public intellectual. So a public intellectual goes back, you know, we've had them in the days of Dick Cavett, when there were actually places.
Worse.
I love Dick Cavett. When there were places you could go on mainstream media and just be smart. Gore Vidal was a public intellectual.
Right.
Norman Mailer was a public intellectual. Carson would interview people like that sometimes. So a public intellectual is somebody who is a well-known persona, but not because they're in movies, but because they're a writer, a thinker. They have big things to say, and I think you count.
I co-sign. I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're putting a target on me, please. No.
By the way, is that the new thing? I co-sign? Is that a thing?
I
co-sign. I like it.
Plus one.
I co-sign. So we had Robert Scoble on. Boy, it's great to have Robert on. I love having people on Twit on who are polarizing. Dvorak's polarizing. You know, those are the people who are really successful. You love them or hate them, but it gets people going. And Robert and I had a fairly heated conversation back and forth for 45 minutes on Facebook. He said, in 1 year from now, you will come back to me and say, you were right, Robert. Facebook is killing it. They are the social platform. I said, what are you talking about? It's getting worse by the moment. He says, you're doing it wrong.
But I, my position is, well, you shouldn't have to do anything. Anyway, we're going to have Robert come back and do an hour-long special on how to cultivate your Facebook feed. So
well, I like that being in the timeline of life so that a year from now when he says Facebook is over. Again, I love Robert. I think he's wonderful. But the bipolar nature of his technology loves.
Yeah.
And hates.
Yeah.
No, that I agree. The Robert Scoble seal of approval is does not carry much weight.
It tends to lose its glue after a while.
But I think he was making some interesting points.
As he does, yes.
And as he often does. Chiefly that if you really care enough to put the energy into it, you can make Facebook something you'll enjoy. So I've been trying to do it. It ain't easy.
Well, of course, the big fight these days about Facebook is that, number one, well, primarily, you don't know to whom you're publishing. Same with Google Plus, but it gets left out of the discussion.
Right.
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 And that's the primary issue. And then the second complaint is that the Fergusons don't bubble up. And Pew had a study out today. I didn't put it on the rundown. A variant of the echo chamber argument that people will not, they don't feel right having harsh political opinions on Facebook. So, right, I don't walk to my neighbor's house to borrow a cup of sugar and say, by the way, Barack Obama's great, and you're wrong to think he's awful.
As soon as I saw that study, I thought, oh, this is just the filter bubble back, and Jeff's going to have something to say about it.
Oh,
this is Claire Kane Miller, who, by the way, gets things wrong more often than right. She writes for the New York Times. I've started, you know, as soon as I saw her byline, I thought, oh. Because I don't know what it is.
Stop right there. No, go back down a little bit. The internet, it seems, is contributing to the polarization of America. Oh.
Yeah.
As people surround themselves with people who think like them and hesitate to say anything different. Now, as I said, my response to this on Twitter was, if this is such an echo chamber, how come all I see is arguments?
That's a good point. We've talked about this before.
If it were an echo chamber, all we'd say is cosine, plus one that, right you are, Bubba. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Right.
Right? How often do you see that? You don't, because people are arguing their faces off on this stupid thing we call a net.
This goes back to the book Eli Pariser wrote called The Filter Bubble, where he said that what happens in these networks is you. This is not. I don't think this is a poor thesis. That is that you cultivate your feeds. That's the whole point of Twitter and Facebook and everything else, that you cultivate your feeds to include only people you agree with. You read your news only to be, you know, to you watch Fox News because you agree with them. You watch MSNBC because you agree with them.
It's not just about agreement or disagreement. It's also about relevance. And so the two arguments back to Eli, and I've debated Eli in public on this. Number one is that it's a hell of a lot more filter bubble to have one editor of the New York Times to select what you care about. That's a far worse filter bubble. And number two, I do see lots of things from all over creation. I see them on Twitter. I see them on TV. I get bombarded with kinds of with stuff. And to argue that these services shouldn't give me higher relevance is ridiculous.
Well, and you also make the point that that from time immemorial, we have surrounded ourselves with friends, loved ones, colleagues who agree with us. Here in Northern California, you know, we've pretty much pushed the Republicans to the sea.
Of the South.
I mean, I think that you don't see people agreeing with one another as much as you see them debate, but there's a lot of liking and favoriting. I mean, there's a lot of attaboy, attagirls that go on that are a little more silent. I think liking and favoriting is kind of
I don't get much of that, Gina. Nobody's attaboy in me.
No, well, but I think more to the point, and you do this in life, you try to arrange things in such a way that you're surrounded by people who share your worldview, do you not?
Yeah, you do. Although, you know, it's interesting. Like, because of Facebook, I am connected to, like, distant family members, or, you know, my wife is connected to coworkers, and you get kind of a glimpse of their kind of internal life in a way that you might not with a distant family member or an acquaintance, right? So, like, there's certainly, like, family members and coworkers whose political views or religious views are so different than my own. And I think in those circumstances, you know, I, there are certain topics I don't bring up at the holidays because I see the monologue, you know, or the dialogue going on Facebook the rest of the year. I don't engage with it because why? I don't want to make enemies, you know, whatever. But that was what I thought of when I read this article. Like, oh yeah, there are times when I just avoid certain topics with certain folks because I just know that it's only going to get weird and bad.
Always does. Facebook is more the Thanksgiving table. Twitter is more the street corner.
Right.
And so they're different contexts for interaction.
But certainly more than you would get in life normally, you get dissenting points of view.
Yes.
More than you would get in the New York Times or Fox News or MSNBC. You get other points of view. And that's, I'm exposed to both sides of Israel-Gaza, for instance.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Pew did a study in 2004, which that you couldn't really replicate today because everybody's online, but there was some portion of people who get their news offline, TV and such, some who get their news online. Those who got their news online were more exposed to their opponent's arguments than those who got their news offline at the time.
I think it's true. I do think it's true. I think... I think I'm much more tolerant of opposing viewpoints than I used to be honest, because of this.
Yeah. I know, you know, I also, to your point, I work at a magnificent school. CUNY is a temple to diversity because it represents New York and New York represents the world. And we value that here tremendously. And so I get different perspectives from my students, which is really important, but I also, my friends online, I get people like Rafat Ali who grew up, he put up a picture of he and his brothers going to school in a horse cart back in India in the day, and I just begged him for more because it was a glimpse of a different life, and he has a different perspective on the world, and I have tons of friends like that online, and I just value, I'm not going to go arguing with them. I'm not going to say, well, you have a dumb life, because they don't. I'm going to savor these glimpses into their lives, or friends of mine online who are from Turkey or from Iraq, and that kind of diversity, I have far more of that today than I ever could have had living in my little suburb.
So let's throw out both this New York Times article and the Pew study.
And while you're at it, throw out Scoble with the bathwater, will you?
Well, but to his credit,
that is
one place. Facebook, particularly, is one place where I see dissenting points of view because I follow people because I know them or because they're family members, not because they agree with me. Twitter maybe more so.
I don't see much. I don't see much. I see more kind of I did this and then I did that.
Well, I see that too, but I have a few friends whose political viewpoints differ greatly from mine. I see a lot of their posts there. Google Plus, I tend to pretty much see people. Agree with me.
You can also kill those who don't.
Yeah. That maybe is part of it. But on the other hand, Google Plus really lends itself to discussion so much better, I think.
It really does. Yeah. Well, but I think that's important too. What we're seeing is, you know, the form matters. There was a... Oh, sorry. Lights just went off. Hold on a second.
Jeff is beset, plagued by the flinty parsimony of the university. The lights will turn off if Jeff doesn't move enough.
Your tax dollars at work, man.
By the way, I like that phrase. I just made that up. Flinty parsimony.
I like that. It's a flavor of ice cream.
I should write that down. I'm going to use that somewhere. Maybe the title of this show.
Persimmons.
You got it. So there was a famous study.
Persimmons. You must have been watching the Simpsons marathon. Persimmons.
This is what happens when you play games for 20 hours.
Odd
things start to amuse you.
At least my brain still works. I wasn't sure.
Of a sort, yeah. So there was a famous study done at the NIH, actually done by the father of my college girlfriend, John Calhoun, throwing rats into an environment. Remember that one?
No, tell me more.
And they overcrowded, and then what happened?
Yeah, that's very famous.
There were chambers, and there were bridges, and some rats staked out the good spot, and then they overcrowded another spot, and so on and so forth. And so there's always been debate about this about Calhoun's study, and there was I just read yesterday an excerpt of a lecture about it now. And I was having thoughts about the rat study with online, because one of the arguments about the rats was not so much that they were overcrowded, but that they were overstimulated with interaction. And it struck me that the odd thing is, online, especially on Twitter, we all act like a bunch of angry rats. But the truth is that we have all the space in the world. We have unlimited virtual space. There's no reason we should feel overcrowded and get grumpy, right? We should just be able to walk around anything that displeases us. We should all be in harmony and happiness because we can ignore anything we want. And why don't we? I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah. No, because I think our minds, most people's minds, anyway, our minds are interested in dissenting points of view, and maybe we even like a little bit of conflict and argument. And I like it, not in moderation, but I enjoy the healthy back and forth.
You it's know, hard to find moderation.
Well, I mean, I think your experience is so defined by who you follow as well. I mean, I don't know that I see, you know, a whole lot of debate, and partially that's just my personality. I don't love conflict.
Yeah.
Like I was just talking to my coworkers about two people I follow who just got into it like in the middle of the night, and it got weird and mean, and it made me uncomfortable, and I was just bummed out. And I know that this is kind of lame, on that debate, you know, conflict shouldn't bug me so much, but I just don't see that often. So when I do see it, it makes me sad, and I tend to either unfollow or mute or whatever. But most of the folks that I follow are pretty chill. So I think it just really has to do, I mean, I think that Jeff in particular invites debate because he's a writer and because he asserts opinions, and I think people want engage him with that. But I don't know that everyone is, you know, uses Twitter kind of that same way.
No, in fact, I think I'm the same as you, Gina. Mommy and Daddy are fighting. No.
Yeah.
I don't like, I will go to great lengths to avoid conflict, even if I'm getting, you know, crappy service
I enjoy debate, but once it gets personal and people start to call names, which happens so quickly, it feels like, particularly on Twitter, it gets bad for me.
Not just Twitter. No, it's the same everywhere. That's social media. And maybe that's the flaw, is that we're not getting real conversations. We're just getting flame wars.
Well, and that goes back to Mike's point last week about Google+, is right. You actually can have conversations there,
yeah.
Which requires control. So there's this, you know, it's, there's this gap between openness, where anything can happen, and control, where you can have civility.
Let's teach our kids to have respectful debates.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the answer is not a technological answer. The answer is a matter of societal norms, and we're trying to figure out and get used to this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm back into my techno panic from years past as I'm doing my research, and there was a right after the Telegraph started, there were novels about women being seduced by men over the Telegraph.
If only.
one of them was a famous novel, and
I love you. Stop. Please kiss me. Stop.
No. I know. I think it was Clive Thompson. I think reviewed one of them recently. And it's pretty amazing stuff. But society didn't know what to do. Well, my God, you can if you think about it, the Telegraph was the first opportunity to have a live conversation with someone distant.
Right.
You couldn't have done that before.
Right.
And that freaked people.
Well, think about it. I mean, we don't. Nobody. You never would have a flame war or trolling in person. Face to face, people are more respectful.
Here it is. Right. If you want to read next, Wired Love, A Romance of Dots and Dashes by Ella Cheever Thayer. If you want to look it up, Chad, you can get it.
I got it here. It's Goodreads. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, it's 1880. Wow.
1880.
It's a then, romance novel.
Is this Clive? Who reviewed it? Clive Thompson reviewed it.
This is
and
amazing.
Said it was actually surprisingly relevant.
At Collision Detection, Wired Love, A Romance of Dots and Dashes by Ella Cheever Thayer. The old, old story in a new, new way. MDCCCLXXX, 1880. Miss Natty Rogers, telegraph operator, lived, as it were, in two worlds. The one, her office, dingy and curtailed as to proportions, flinty in its parsimony, but
Persimmons.
Yeah. Oh, you remember my speaking about CN wondering whether a gentleman or lady? Oh, yes, Quimby remembered and fidgeted on his chair. He proved to be a gentleman. Oh, yes, exactly, you know, responded Quimby, looking anything but elated. It must be very romantic and fascinating to talk with someone so far away, a mysterious stranger that one has never seen. I should get up a nice little sentimental affair immediately. I know I should. Yes, telegraphy has its romantic side. It would be dreadfully dull if it did not. Wow. Very interesting.
Love in dots and dashes.
That is great. So what is this? I'm reading this Claire Kane Miller, and then I realize this is on a new thing that the New York Times started this spring called The Upshot.
Mm-hmm. It's their answer to Vox and 538.
So it's the Times, but it's like this kind snappy. Of
data. Man, we use data here.
Yeah, an opinion. Like, you don't want me to recline in my airline seat? Well, you can pay me, by Josh Barham. That's right above Claire Kane Miller's How Social Media Silences Debate. And don't get mad if Burger King gets Canadian. This is not your father's New York Times.
Yeah.
This is trying to have that kind of perspective-y thing.
And they have, this is where they put their interactive charts and,
DataViz.
DataViz. Yeah. Wow, interesting. So this is to appeal to the internet generation or something? What is it?
Yeah.
It's web only. There's no newspaper version of this.
I don't know if they quote some stuff in the paper or not. Yeah. I never looked at the paper. I haven't the faintest idea.
Actually, this story is quite interesting. Uber's secret agent. So you see what Uber, and The Verge gets credit, by the way, for a great big scoop. What Uber has been trying to do to Lyft. Now, Uber and Lyft are both ride-sharing services. They're kind of disintermediating taxi cabs. They use apps on your smartphone to order a ride, and you get all sorts of nice features, like you see where the driver is and so forth. Lyft is somewhat more down market. They have pink mustaches on the cars, and the car can be older. Uber, the car has to be newer. Uber has Uber X, which is a little more like Lyft. But apparently, because this market is a zero-sum market, every ride Lyft gets is a ride Uber won't, and vice versa. Uber's been resorting to some pretty dirty tactics.
Now, there's arguments about this that whether Uber's goal was to waste money at Lyft or whether Uber's goal was just to recruit drivers at Lyft.
I think it's the latter. They have Operation Slog, and the idea is they've hired a considerable number of street operatives who get paid only on commission, $750 according to The Verge, for each new Lyft driver they seduce over to the Uber side. And what these guys get, they get a burner phone. They're supposed to move around in different street corners, call for a Lyft cab, get in the cab, and start a conversation with the aim of getting that driver to become an Uber driver, how much better it is, and blah, blah, blah. The problem is, of course, once you've done that once, you don't want somebody else doing the same thing. And you don't want to get this. So apparently there's a considerable number of cancellations that happen when people realize, oh, I've seen that. I've talked to that guy already.
So that's where the cancellations were happening. I hadn't realized
that. That's the story now.
CNN had reported that Uber employees had ordered then canceled more than 5,000 Lyft rides. And this number from Lyft, of course. Lyft says Uber is flat out lying to their customer. I have to say, even if it's just a recruitment, it's very aggressive.
Extremely.
Unfair to those drivers who get canceled. It's really, really...
Well, and unfair to the rider who doesn't get a ride because some...
Yeah. Well, for that matter, in demand pricing, if the demand seems artificially high, it raises the pricing for everybody, doesn't it?
I think The Verge has done some very good reporting here. They've got the documents. They've talked to Slog recruits. By the way, Uber has responded by reminding Slog recruits that they have signed an NDA and they are not to speak to the press.
Well, it's also interesting that there is obviously an Edward Snowden of the cab world here.
Yeah, there's a leaker or two.
Yeah.
But these leakers are leaking out the documents and so forth. And this is all over the country, thousands of them. I think The Verge has nailed them. Even if it doesn't, if it's not canceling rides, and I believe that that probably is just a side effect. Not that Uber minds.
Just for the sake of argument, if they were just trying to lose the business, it's just like click fraud, right? I'm gonna cost my competitor money. Is that illegal? And under what law is it illegal?
It's anti-competitive.
Is that what that's what it would be?
I wonder if there are, I'm sure that that could be interpreted as some sort of anti-competitive.
It's fraudulent behavior. Yeah.
I tell you, it makes me not want to ride either Uber or Lyft.
Yeah.
But why not Lyft? Guys,
I don't know. I feel like Lyft is also kind of stirring the pot a little bit here. These guys are in heart because they're the ones who said, hey, 5,000 rides canceled.
These guys should be saying our highest priority is to make sure that you have a safe ride accommodated to your destination.
Yeah.
And that's what they should be concentrating on.
Yeah.
And by concentrating on this hoo-ha, it makes me wonder about how much they really care about customer service and how much they're just a volume business like the manufacturer of my light switch.
Again with the flinty parsimony. For the most part, ambassadors work at events are on college campuses. Promoting Uber is a cheap and easy way of getting around town. That goal to recruit riders, Uber calls slanging. But since at least midsummer, some brand ambassadors in New York have been turning their talents against Lyft. Using Uber-provided iPhones and credit cards, the contractors hail rides, strike up conversations with the Lyft drivers and attempt to sign them up before they arrive at their destination. In other cities, recruiters travel with driver kits that include iPhones and everything else a driver needs to get started on Uber. By the way, it is not illegal, although the companies discourage it, for drivers to drive for both Lyft and Uber, to have both.
Right. Yeah, I mean, haven't these drivers, I feel really conflicted about this whole thing, because on one hand, be ruthlessly competitive, right? I mean, is it illegal or not? I mean, I find the whole thing really kind of distasteful, and
it's illegal to order a pizza to prank somebody by having a pizza delivered to their house.
Sure,
it's the same thing.
Oh yeah, the cancellations are horrible.
Yeah.
But the actual rides where the Uber folks are paying Lyft to give them the ride, but having this conversation with them in the car.
No, that's not illegal.
That doesn't seem. But I find it distasteful.
Yeah.
But as a business owner, it makes me question. What are my lines? Uber's. Very aggressively trying to recruit drivers. I mean, the first question that came to my mind is these drivers are aware that Uber exists, right? Like they've clearly, tried Lyft. I mean, I it's interesting to me. I mean, it sounds like Uber feels like they're giving the Lyft drivers something, the harder sell or something that, they didn't know before. I don't know. I have always felt kind of wary of Uber. Part of it is that they're getting built into all these different apps, including Google Maps. It feels like there's this like classist thing going on, the Uber helicopters to the Hamptons. It just feels so, I don't know. I don't know it just seems sketchy to me.
And I think that's a brand issue.
Well, now that it's out, it's a black mark against Uber for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet everyone seems to think that they're the best way to get a ride. And you hear, the Uberization of everything. Uber is this like model for what startups should be or like certain kinds of new innovation should be. And that also makes me nervous.
There might be a little undercurrent, seedy undercurrent of startups where there's such drive to succeed and turn and to grow and to appeal to the investors and make sure they're happy. That maybe you would cross the line a little bit because of it.
Yeah, growth hacking and stupid backhanded tricks, right? To pump up page views or get users or whatever. I mean, this is part of it.
Yeah.
It's when we operate by the wrong metrics. You get what you measure. I don't know if we talked about it last week or not.
Isn't Uber beloved because they're modern, they're cool, they're above this, they wouldn't do this kind of stuff. They're the good guys.
Right. They're empowering you to get a cheap ride. They're empowering the driver to make a living doing this. They could be so above it. And
they should be.
But this is where the metrics come in. But who's judging their success? It's not riders and drivers at all. It's investors.
Yeah.
They deliver kittens. They deliver ice cream. There's this high-end feeling. It feels like a premium service. Like you're getting treated like, a rich and famous person.
By the way, when you get an Uber card, do you sit in the front or the back?
Oh, the back. Why would you sit in the front? What are you?
I sit in the front.
What are you, a commie?
It's so slow, and it's like you got it. Yeah.
On the Lyft, I would sit in the front.
I think
the Uber,
like Australian.
In the Uber, I'm in back, baby.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Why? Back. Because of the brand difference?
Yeah.
The difference between a black car. So
there's a Lincoln Continental and a Toyota Celica. With Lyft, I'm getting in the front seat because it's a Lyft from my buddy. With Uber, that's a driver, and I'm in a black car.
No, Leo, UberX. UberX, I'm talking.
I don't do UberX. I don't know what that
is.
Oh,
I see. Okay.
I don't do. I've only done Uber a few times. We don't have Uber or Lyft in Petaluma. We have a taxi cab company.
It was very nice.
It's a very nice taxi cab company. And actually, that, you know, I'm starting to like the taxi model.
I used Uber once in San Francisco. I didn't even use it. Ron from All About Android called me an Uber or tapped me an Uber to get back after doing All About Android in studio. I don't know. Here in Brooklyn, I call 7th Avenue Car Service.
Right.
Local business.
Interesting. So you don't use Uber either? I would, because you have Uber. You could do it.
Yeah.
I haven't used it.
I don't know.
York.
Maybe it's just old habits.
Huh.
I never use a cab. I haven't been in a cab in 5 years in New York.
Wow.
Maybe that's an exaggeration, but it's a rare day. I'm a subway guy, strictly. I don't do buses. I just do subways.
Mm. All right. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, you guys can pick. I see a lot of stories. Nothing just wows me, but you guys can pick the stories you'd like to talk about. Of course, we've got the Google changelog coming up. We could talk about Amazon getting Twitch, stealing it away from Google, apparently in a bidding war. That might be of interest, too.
I think we're still in the summer. It's not summer doldrums quite, but I think.
This is the slow time. Because in a week, we're going to have new iPhone, maybe even a new iWatch is the rumor. We're going to have a new Moto X. I'm excited about that. I've got a conundrum. I've had this phone for a whole month. I don't know what I'm going to do next. No, I have a conundrum because I really like the OnePlus, actually. But I've loved the Moto X, and I can't wait to see what they do. And I want the 360 because it's round, even if it's a flat tire round. LG says, we figured it out. We don't have to have a flat tire on our round.
Yeah, I can't wait for that now.
That makes me mad because I bought a square LG, though. I mean, it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
There's a balancing act between coming out too soon and too late. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the new iPhone, which looks very appealing, especially, and I think that now the rumors are congealing that around the idea that there'll be not only a 4.7-inch, but a 5.5-inch.
5.5.
One
plus one size.
I like it. Big is good.
How big is the current iPhone?
4 inches. And that's up from 3.5 2 years ago. Yeah.
My iPhone friends see my phone and they're just like, what is that? Is it a tabletop? Like,
yeah.
Just
the world is now divided between the smallies and the biggies.
But it feels so normal to me now.
Yes. You get used to big, and nobody anymore jokes about, is that a side of beef you're talking into? It doesn't happen anymore, except for among the iPhone crew.
The one thing is, Gina, you were right. The front jeans pocket doesn't work.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore. It's true.
But I've always kept my phone in my breast pocket.
That's so nerdy.
It's like a pocket square.
That's, yeah, exactly. It's
very
really,
stylish.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very Don Draper, yes.
No. No, it's not.
No? No. Sorry, Leo.
I wish it were.
You need a white one.
I wish I were Don Draper. God, you don't know how much I wish I were Don Draper. At least I have a great mattress. Have you... If Don Draper had a mattress, he would have a Casper. I am not kidding. Let me tell you, I spent a lot of time buying mattresses. I don't know why, but late in the last couple of years, I bought several mattresses. I got one that was too firm, and then I got one that was too soft, and now I've got one that was just right. And the problem is, so you go in the mattress store and you lie on the mattress with the beady-eyed person looking at you. And you can't really tell. Are you supposed to curl up? You can't tell. You just lie there looking at the ceiling, go, I guess I'll take that one. And I think in my head I like firm. But then I got soft, but then I don't like the too soft is Anyway, Casper's great. One of the reasons Casper's great is because, first of all, they're very affordable, very well-made, very nice mattresses, and you have 100 days to return it. So you have more than 3 months to see whether you like it. You're going to get a great night's sleep. Show the video. We got my Casper. First of all, this is hysterical. Shipping's free. It comes in a box. This is a queen-size mattress that's a small, like a college refrigerator size. So you open the box. By the way, I didn't do it right. They said open the box where you want your mattress to be. I opened it in the foyer, but that's okay. And then it comes with a little opener. It's got Tyvek sleeve. You open it up, and then it goes, it plumps. And now you've got a really comfortable mattress using just the right combination. Watch this. Of premium latex and memory foam. So it's just what I want, which is soft on top with a firm underneath. I don't know. I can't describe it. It's great. Long-lasting comfort and support. Very affordable. You buy them online, completely risk-free because you have free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. Oh, night-night. The Casper people have a great sense of humor. They sent me a book in my Casper box. There's Lisa. She loves it, too. They sent me Lytton Strachey's Eminent Victorians in the box, which is definitely put you out. Thank you, Terry, for that. But it's really cool. Statistically, they say lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you, and I will vouch for that. I've done it, and these are made in America. They're really comfy. They do a great job. They even give you a little good night book that tells you how to live with your Casper. You can put it right on the floor. I like this so much, I got one for Henry for his dorm. Not dorm, but his house, his college house. And that's how he's going to do it, right on the floor. But we can also put it on a box spring or a slatted base. It's well made. Really nice. Very comfortable. No springs. If you've never slept on a foam mattress, you'll say, where's the lumps? They're perfect. But don't think it's like just a piece of foam. It really isn't. It's really nice. It's really nice. And this cover can be unzipped and washed. I am very happy. They have a very nice team there. So I just want you to try Casper mattresses. You'll find them at Casper Sleep, C-A-S-P-E-R, sleep.com/twig. And save $50, by the way, when you use the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king. Now compare that to the prices in the mattress store, plus 100
days.
Plus,
you don't have to go through all that mishigas of trying to say, is that mattress like that mattress?
No, I know. It's
a whole industry that's made up trying to fool you.
Petaluma, it's a very high profit industry. Petaluma has like 8 mattress stores. And literally, they're twice as expensive as the Casper. These are really nice. I'm very happy. When I showed a picture of the Casper on Twitter, a lot of people said, I've been thinking about it, but do you like it? Yes, I do very much. You should try it. And of course, 100 days to return it if you don't like it. By the way, for every mattress you purchase through this show, Casper's going to donate $50 to Child's Play, which is really nice. A very nice charity that helps sick kids.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that. Casper, they're really nice people. Caspersleep.com/twig. So you'll save $50 and $50 goes to Child's Play.
I'm shopping for one.
I know that if you get it and you don't like it, I'm never going to hear the end of it. So,
no.
No, I know you, Jeff, and you will like it. I'm not kidding.
More than my light switch.
Well, that I don't like. No flinty parsimony at
Casper. No flinty mattresses for me.
No. So let's do why don't we play the trumpets and do the change log?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
The Google change log.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Gina Trapani.
Hey, we got a few things today. If you're on iOS, Google has released updates to the Docs and Sheets app for iOS. And this update lets you open, edit, and save Microsoft Office documents. They've also released Google Slides for iOS.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Big new feature here in Sheets and Docs is you can edit Microsoft Office documents natively. So you can open anything created in Office, and then you can also save those files in their original Office formats. You can create and edit Google Slides on iOS now with the new Slides app. So, yeah, get those before the new iPhone comes out. Hangouts got a refresh in Gmail, which adds this new contacts tab. There's a little tab. It's not a text label. It's just a little kind of androgynous person icon. But you tap on that icon, and it sorts your contacts by whether or not they're online. So it puts your online contacts at the top. And you can also pin certain contacts at the top as well. So
I want Hangouts to get better. I feel like it's so close. It's just so heavyweight. I don't know what's wrong, but I really want to use the Hangouts. I really want to like it.
Mm-hmm. The Android Hangouts app just drives me nuts because I can't tell whether I'm sending a Hangout message or an SMS.
Yeah.
Ah.
Most of my phone calls are with Hangouts, though, even at home, because I can wear my headset and I sit in front of the computer. It's just easy.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff, I think there might be a setting in Hangouts that lets you either set different colors or separate SMS and Hangouts. I'll look into that.
Typical. Jarvis just complains. Gina solves.
No, but of course that's not the default because Google wants just all your messages to be seamlessly together, kind of a la iMessage. But Hangouts is still a little bit clunky in that area. There's a new, there's a big update to a very old app. Do you guys remember Google News and Weather for Android?
It
came out forever ago.
Oh, yeah.
hasn't gotten any love for a really long time. And boom, version 2.0 just dropped, adding material design. It's got the card layout akin to what you see in Google now. There's support for local news and weather for multiple locations, a new resizable home screen widget. It's for Android 4.0 and higher, and it's rolling out gradually. I mean, we covered this last night on All About Android, and I thought, well, why not just Google Now? The difference between news and weather and Google Now is that News and Weather is actually kind of a full-featured news app with different sections, technology, sports, where you get sort of in a more conventional, typical newspaper, whereas, Now recommends news based on the things that you search for.
How many news apps does Google need?
I know.
I stopped installing this one, installed Currents, then they kind of let that one go and put Newsstand.
Newsstand, which is kind of okay. It's not rolled out to me yet. I think I'm a news junkie, but I think it's a bit of a waste. They have tremendous power with Google News, and they're not really using it.
I'm going to download News and Weather again. I haven't installed it.
I don't have it yet.
Oh, I don't see it in the app. So it's not everywhere yet.
Yeah, it seems to be rolling out gradually, so you might not see it on your phone or tablet right away. I really like Circa for when I just want to browse news.
Yeah.
The Guardian app is also great, but... Google News and Weather, material design. Maybe it's just an example of what material design should look like.
Could be.
Speaking of Android, the Google Search app for Android updated with navigation cards that look like the ones in Google Maps. So if you search for destination or directions between two locations in the Google Search app, you'll get these navigation cards that display a map that outlines the trip with the approximate travel time, distance, suggested and alternative routes, desired mode of transportation, and step-by-step directions. That's all just in the Google search results without having to launch Maps. Of course, you can just tap on the card to launch Maps if you want to do that. And finally, Google Plus users can now import their videos into their YouTube account. So if you've auto-uploaded videos to Google Plus or you want to back them up to YouTube, you want to publish them on YouTube, you can go in YouTube, go to the uploads page, and click on the import button, and then you've got a chooser. You can choose any of your Google Plus videos and bring them on into YouTube, and then you can publish them on YouTube if you want. Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of a nice benefit of having Google Plus and YouTube kind of merged. And that's all I got.
Oh, yeah, import video.
Import video, yeah. There you go.
I have a lot of video, all of it trivial and dumb, because it's camera phone video.
Yep.
But maybe I should put it on YouTube. Why not?
Why not?
Okay, that's the changelog. Play the drums slowly.
All right, Google, you know, since you're the master of accents, the thing I wanted you to try out today, did you see the thing about how you can fool Google now into responding to you with a British accent if you use a British accent?
Really?
I haven't tried it myself. I want to see if you, the master, can make this happen.
Okay, Google. Wait a minute. That's why everything's responding now. Stop it. Oh, no. Hey, stop it. Bop it. Oh, I hate it when that happens. I'm British. What are you going to do now? All right. Oh, dear. Let's close that. Okay. Is it in the OK Google that you have to be British? Or?
After you say OK Google, ask a question in your normal California accent.
Yeah.
And then ask the next question in a British accent. And according to this, unless I was being fooled by this video, it answers back to you in a different voice.
That doesn't seem right. How tall is Wilt Chamberlain?
Wilt Chamberlain is 7 feet, 1 inch tall.
How tall is Neville Chamberlain? Oh, it won't know that. I'm sorry. Let me do something it can answer. How tall is the Queen?
Elizabeth II is 5 feet, 4 inches tall.
Oh, she's tall. I think she was that tall. I doubt that works.
It could be faked up, but I thought I'd...
Hello, Governor. How tall is Mary Poppins? I better get this corrected before I go to London. They're gonna chase me out of the town. All right. I think you were punked. I can't...
What's the weather in London?
Okay, Google. Where's the nearest place to get bangers and mash? Oh, you have to do stuff. It'll talk, though. I'm sorry. How long is the Golden Gate Bridge?
Golden Gate Bridge has a length of 8,980 feet.
I don't think that. I think
that was
I can't just do an accent without nowhere. I can't do it.
I'm not even going to try.
Let's
you
see.
Guys.
This is Boy Genius Report.
How long is the Golden Gate Bridge?
Oh, he asked the same question.
Golden Gate Bridge has a length of 8,980 feet.
Okay, Google. How long is the Golden Gate Bridge?
That's the worst.
Yeah, yours was better.
Golden Gate Bridge has a length of 8,900 feet.
That is bogus, bogus,
is that bogus.
Yeah, you think it's bogus?
Absolutely bogus.
Yeah, your accent was definitely heavier.
Absolutely bogus. That is edited to change the fact that they changed the settings in the middle of that. That's ridiculous.
You just can't trust anything on the internet.
No.
My favorite can't trust it story of the day.
Yeah.
That's all over in my world. The Independent reports that the Times of London, in its new office, has speakers up, and they're going to put in the sound of clicking typewriters to motivate the staff. Staff these days don't even know what a typewriter sounds like.
What's that noise? Do we have woodpeckers?
Pump in the smell of ink and gin. And that'll be
there you go. And sweat.
Yes.
Amazon buys Twitch. We thought, and in fact reported as if it were true, that Google was going to buy Twitch. No. The stories have varied. TechCrunch said that Google blinked. That Google somehow didn't bid enough and TechCrunch was the one who reported that Google had acquired them. The price is the same, $1 billion. Actually, the deal Amazon says was $970 million in cash. Wow. And the rest was in retainer fees to people in the company.
But Forbes says the reason that they backed off because of antitrust fears.
Yes, rightly so. Rightly so. Although, well, I don't know. That may not be fair. I think there's enough competition in that space. But why would Amazon...
What space is it?
I mean, I see the space of watching people play video games.
Yeah, I know. It's
antitrust. First of all, that makes no sense. I've never seen a company yet drop a bid for fear of antitrust. And Google itself, when bought Motorola, I mean, companies don't act in fear of antitrust. They act, and then if they get turned down, they don't do it. But T-Mobile and Sprint, Comcast and Time Warner, I don't think companies act that way. That doesn't sound right. XM and Sirius, these are all things that you would have thought on the face of it. There's no way they're going to get those through.
Yeah.
And I think you can make a strong case that Twitch is just one of many streaming services. That's not.
So you think that's a face-saving rumor because they lost the deal?
Yeah, I think they lost the deal. And it could be that the Twitch folks wanted more money, or it could be they didn't want to work for Google. Remember, then they're just a small part of a bigger operation called YouTube. At Amazon, they probably have the run of the place. In fact, I was wondering, why Amazon?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Amazon's clearly moving towards creating content. They do shows now. In fact, my suspicion is that they would like to get the Hachettes of the world out of the publishing business and just publish direct. You know, why not control the content? But they don't really have a platform where they don't have a live streaming platform at all. And so I'm not sure what the overall it made so much sense to tie it to YouTube, where really watching people game is a big part of YouTube. $1 billion is a lot for Amazon. They only have about $5 billion in cash.
Yeah.
So that's a 20% of a lot of money. They say they're not going to move Twitch to Seattle, that they're going to leave them in San Francisco, that they're going
to
pretty much
what's to move.
It's like, yeah, it's not that many employees. I don't know.
I still don't get it. I'm an old fart. I know it. This discussion makes me feel older than any other discussion we have. Just don't get Twitch.
You know, it's funny. I get Twitch much more than I get YouTube. I don't get YouTube, but I do understand Twitch. Twitch, that's, I get that. Oh, of course, remember, this is the guy who spent 9 hours last night playing Diablo 3.
Yeah.
But I don't. I would rather play than watch somebody play. But there are a lot of reasons why you'd watch somebody play. In fact, I often do see Twitch videos before I buy a game because I want to see what the game looks like.
Well, I get that.
The biggest thing I think that's happening, and Chad's probably a better guy to ask about than me, but the biggest thing I think is happening is it's not really about the gameplay. The most successful ones are humorists. They're funny. And the gameplay is just an excuse. It's just a stage for on which they can perform. Is that right, Chad, do you think?
Absolutely. None of these people are experts at the game.
Well, some are, but few.
Very few.
Yeah,
very
few. You're not talking Thresh here.
I would say, yeah, maybe 2 or 3 out of 100.
Some of them, the ones I see Michael watching, it's not even about the gameplay. He's not learning gameplay. It's a humor.
Absolutely.
It's like Red versus Blue. It's like Machinima.
Yeah.
It was not worth the trouble, but the joke I wanted to do is I wanted to go make one on me playing solitaire.
And there's people that are so entertaining that they can do that. That they play.
That's exactly right.
That they play Kim Kardashian's Hollywood iPad game, and it's hilarious every moment of it.
If you're funny,
well, there's a lot of comedic material there. But yes. If you're a personality, they're just using the game as a thing to rip
off. That's what I think. It's a stage.
But they're talking about the game and they're making fun of the game, right.
And they make the people do stupid things.
Well, if you think about it, I mean the biggest game currently on Twitch right now is League of Legends. That is not a funny game. There's nothing built into that game to make it funny or entertaining.
Well, let's really drive Jeff batty. Let's just watch a little Twitch TV right now. What do you say? Who's the best League of Legends? I mean, that's the biggest game right now.
Right now, yeah.
26,000 people right now. And ladies and gentlemen, you may hear some profanity here because that most of this stuff is fairly
is that
profane.
Life?
Oh, first, let's have pancakes. And this, by the way, is where the money comes from. It may just Amazon may just see it as an ad platform. They don't have. And there you go. Come on.
Content
by the way, there's no skip button on this.
No, it's a 30-second pre-roll that you can't skip.
Oh, man. You know, it's really bad. They started the game, and then they went to the ad.
Yeah. They let you know that you can watch the stream
first,
after this ad is done.
Pancakes. All right, here we go. Let's listen and watch. This is 26,000 people. More people are watching this right now than are watching us.
Okay.
So he's got some rap music. Is that, that's not part of the game.
Nope.
So this guy's not even saying funny things.
Now, I'm not sure if this is perhaps a tournament. And
oh,
he's not
a,
saying anything
maybe
because...
he's actually playing.
Right, he's truly trying hard to play.
This is Night Blue 3 playing.
Probably wasn't worth the TP just because, like, not getting much out of it.
I mean, I would say the same, you know, not getting much out of that TP. So,
he sounds
obviously.
Like he's 12.
Probably is.
Their AD is actually really strong.
So this is a guy who's actually playing.
I'm just going to continue farming at this point.
And people are watching this because they're learning about League of Legends?
Plus, yeah, really like, weak, he's so. Saying, he's also saying game specific, like, AD is an AD carry.
Right.
Which is a specific type. Lord, he's farming, so he's trying to get the minions hopefully. To get more gold so he can level up
Why
his character
Why would you do
label.
This, Chad, instead of Later. Just play the game?
Lots of people who are watching this can't afford the same type of perks he has.
Ah. So you're watching a high-level player.
Right. And also, he's very skilled. I mean, that's why you watch sports. Like, right. Why wouldn't you just go out
so
and play
So League
sports?
Of Legends may not be a good example.
That... It's very true.
Look.
It's hard to parse everything into Twitch into one stream, and on top of that, one 30-second stream.
Right.
I mean...
Let's watch Rabbit Bong play.
Rabbit Bong. Hooray.
So she's cute.
Sure.
Does that help?
Yes. She also has a face cam, which is known to...
That draws more people.
Draw a lot more people.
There's a chat room here, by the way, on the left.
Yep, she's streaming that.
And Hello? She's wearing a low-cut jumper.
You're level 14.
You're right, Jeff. I'm too old, too.
Oh. You've also gone, it's like, into
I'm
the deep end,
off.
And you're expecting to watch 30 seconds worth and understand the whole community. I mean, it's not going to happen.
That's like the argument about Christianity.
I am in too deep. Well, I'm just looking for something. Let's look at some of the most popular channels. Here's
I know I'm the weird one here. I'm not criticizing. I know.
No, you
I'm
want
just,
to know. You want to get.
I don't get it.
Minecraft might be more appropriate, right, Chad? Because that's do you see more humor in Minecraft?
There can be, yeah. But also streams are more. I mean, humor is very good. You know, that's always going to happen,
right?
But streams, you have so much time to fill.
There's a lot of dead time.
Yes.
And some of the viewership of this is just on in the background, or are people actually, like, watching it, glued to it?
So, most of it's in the background.
Reddit says the funniest Twitch user is Wishand, W-S-H-A-N-D.
You ever hear of him, Chad?
He might not be live right now.
Right.
But you can't watch it.
Yeah, you can. It doesn't have to be streaming. Let's search for Wishand. Wishand Dice.
No sleep is always good for some late night laughs, says Reddit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got
Lyric,
I think
L-I-R-I-K. Okay. Well, you haven't made me laugh.
Now, there is a guy, get this.
Be entertaining.
There is a guy on Twitch who streams the Oregon Trail. Now, that's got to be, nobody's trying to get better at the Oregon Trail unless he's in fourth grade.
One of my favorites is Man versus Game.
I like that.
Who plays? He's like going through basically like every game from his childhood from basically any time, and he has to beat it, and then he moves on to the next game.
Yeah,
and
I like that idea.
Another one of my favorites is Sevidus, who does Minecraft stuff. The thing is that like you were mentioning people, and I'm just like I don't know.
You don't
because
know these.
I
people.
Know the people that I like.
You know the YouTube people, or do you watch Twitch?
I watch Twitch. I stream on Twitch once a week.
This guy, you do? What do you stream? Minecraft?
Yeah, Minecraft. I've been doing The Sims 3 a lot. Modded Minecraft is normally what I do.
Uh-huh.
And, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a three-hour
so
stream.
So you're playing it anyway. Might as well just stream it.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, there's definitely a very different atmosphere when you're streaming.
Here's Monotone Tim playing Roller Coaster 2.
Did you just click into this highlight? Yeah. So he'll have 15 minutes or so of prep time so that people can tell he's live, and then they'll join the chat room. So he's probably playing something.
No, this is
Yeah, this is
highlight.
The video. Yeah, VOD. It's a video on demand of what happened in the past. So you'll probably want to skip
That's
ahead
because it's saying hold on.
Right there. Right,
here we go.
Even elementary school teachers and whatnot. Nope, they had to know. Like, no, I am the world's most gifted fourth grader.
Yeah, you know what? I'm old too, Jeff.
Leo, not a Twitch.
I'm old
this
too.
This is terrible. This is like old people try to understand this newfangled gaming streaming thing.
I feel terrible for it. It's making me feel old and out of it. I'm not making fun of people doing it. I just feel like I'm
all right.
Oh.
One more. This is from Gomery in our chat room. He says, this video, if you watch this, this is why Twitch is worth $1 billion. Day 7, fish versus fish in Street Fighter. Oh, but first an ad about something.
It feels like watching the director's commentary of a movie.
But not even that good because it's not a movie you know or a director you care about. So it's not that.
Yeah,
random viewers' commentary on a movie.
Yeah. The way you're setting it up, though, is basically setting it up to fail. I mean, you don't go in and expecting to watch.
I want it to fail.
I know. 30 seconds worth of it.
I'll take half a billion for Twit, and I think it's twice as valuable. All right, here we go. Fish versus fish playing Street Fighter.
Twitch plays Pokemon.
Oh, so these are actual fish.
Those are fish playing.
This is pretty funny. So this is a fish tank in the upper left-hand corner, and on the fish tank, they have created a grid for the different moves, forward, backwards, and then strikes. And so basically what you're seeing on the right is the actual Street Fighters fighting according to random fish swimming around. And, of course, not much is happening because the fish aren't really very aggressive. He actually won. But how long can you watch this?
It's funny for...
No, it's good. I got it. It's funny. Yeah. That's good. And I'm done because I don't think it's going to be any different for the next 4 hours.
I want to do a video of gamer kids watching Twig.
Yeah, they would really. What are they talking about? Oh, they're fair, so stupid.
Fair, then what?
Then what happens?
When are they going to be funny?
Is there going to be a joke?
This is entertainment. I'm just kidding. I'm just messing around.
I've wasted 37 years of my life trying to learn how to do broadcasting. And these kids, these kids today.
They don't know professionals when they see them.
Okay, well, there you go. I think it makes sense if Amazon could put ads on. I mean, they can monetize it. It's just it's a strange business.
I think what's interesting at a bigger scale, it's the coincidence of stories hitting, but I've long felt that the real fight here is not Google versus Facebook or Google versus Microsoft. It's Google versus Amazon.
Yeah.
And, we see them
fighting. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, and so we see this week. So fine. So Google lost. Amazon got it. We certainly have seen that happen with other companies where they say, I gotcha. Fine. We also see Amazon entering the ad business and trying to get more serious about that, which may, you're right, Leo, indicate something about this.
It's all about the ads.
Biz, yeah. Content and ads. Yeah. And audience and ads. And then Google bought Zinc, a very high-end special effects in the cloud company.
Well, that makes sense. They need to buy more of this stuff for Chromebooks. Yeah.
Right. And they're going to move, not just Chromebooks, too. It's now served on the Amazon cloud.
Oh.
Not on. I'm just going to get a broom. I'm going to get a big broom and move it over there. It's because I moved over, so I didn't get the sunlight coming, but never mind.
It's all right.
So
zinc's stuff has been used in Looper and Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, and so that, imagine if you could take that kind of functionality and bring it down to cloud-based stuff for you or me. That's pretty powerful.
It ran on Amazon Web Services. Obviously, it'll be running on Google services. So it could just merely be that Google wants a proof of concept. See, you can do this on our cloud, but I bet you it has to do with Chromebooks and the ability to do more with Chrome OS.
Well, the more they move high-end activities to the cloud.
Well, that's one of the main reasons you buy a computer is to edit video.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that on a Chromebook, or can you?
Can you?
Wouldn't that be something? All right, your turn, Gina. What story do you like on all of this? Cyanogen joining up with Google, Amazon, and HTC folks to build something unnamed
I probably should have put it on the run now because they don't know anything.
They're building something really cool, but we don't know what.
We don't know what it is.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. We can do the diaspora story.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
That's kind of, yeah. Well, diaspora is, just a little recap. That was the first Kickstarter project I ever donated to. They were formed a few years ago. It was a bunch of college kids who said, we can do a better Facebook, and it will be, and this is the key, distributed. Federated. Yeah, it's going to be a federated system where everybody can run a node. Anybody who wants to can run a node, and they're all federated together. They did, in fact, do it, I guess.
They got it up.
I mean, that's surprise number one. I thought it was long gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But apparently...
No, it exists.
It does exist. Nodes. And it is being used by terrorists.
Right. I mean, this goes back to our conversation we had last week where Twitter was removing links to the ISIS video, the beheading video, because they have that sort of centralized control. But Diaspora, because it's a federated network... ISIS said, okay, well, we're just going to distribute this video here. And there isn't one central controlling body that can remove all the links.
In fact, if you go to join Diaspora, the first thing they say is, you can't join here. You have to find a pod or
right,
set up your own pod.
Right, not a node, right, a pod.
And if you have a pod or you join another pod, then they will federate. And these are all the Diaspora-hosted pods. There's actually a pretty goodly list.
Yeah, there was this great conversation on Twitter, and I wish I could find it, but it was between, like, Dave Morin and Chris Messina and a few other people talking about, like, the dream of the federated network and the federated protocol, you know, and how email is really the only federated network that we have.
What is federated? Right? What does that mean?
Meaning that there's no central, you know, one body that owns it and controls it, right? So with email, everybody sets up their own separate email server, or maybe someone provides it for you, like Google or Microsoft or Yahoo or whatever. But they can all talk to one another. We all receive messages basically the same way using a standard protocol, and it's not controlled. You know, once an email is sent, it's not like, you know, any one person can delete the email from everywhere. It's a network of nodes that send messages to and from one another. They can all understand one another, and it works, right? Unlike Twitter or Facebook, where there's a centralized control in this one company and whatever.
Was Evan Prodromu's goal with StatusNet.
Yes.
In fact, we ran a StatusNet server. It was a federated Twitter. We ran the Twit Army for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you could post something on Twit Army that would then go to status.net and other places. And
yep.
So I think it's a great idea because it's decentralized. Anyway, the problem with Diaspora is it's open source, so anybody can host a pod, including the bad guys, whoever that might be.
Right. I mean, that's a feature or a bug, depending on how you look at it.
You can do about it.
Right.
It's like saying, "Hey, Linus Torvalds, there's terrorists using Linux. You got to stop them."
Right. That's not.
Can't stop it.
Right.
Nothing you can do about it.
But it goes back to the discussion we had last week, is it does openness necessarily breed bad behavior?
No.
Right.
It breeds all behavior. Some of it will be bad, some of it will be good. Humans are humans. Until we perfect humanity, we're not going to be able to say.
But in other systems in society, we manage to deal with norms. So I don't go on the street and start yelling at somebody.
But that's what makes somebody a terrorist, is they don't care.
But terrorists couldn't disrupt normal everyday life.
That's what they do.
In real life, the way they can online.
Yeah, I mean, they do. That's their whole point.
I'm not agreeing with what I'm saying, but I'm trying to say, is there a step change here that says that it's absolutely uncontrollable, or will we develop norms that and mechanisms to affect bad behavior more?
Yeah, but norms only work to the point that somebody's willing to obey them, and people who like terrorists, who have a strong mission, they're willing to violate norms. Norms aren't going to protect you against terrorists.
Leo, if I go on the streets of New York and I start screaming, and I would never do this, and just for sake of example, a racist word, I would get shouted down, stared down, attacked, accused. People would stand up for right behavior against me for doing that.
Unless you were holding a gun while you did it.
True.
Then norms wouldn't help.
So
then you would have to have the police come and get you.
Fine. So come down from the level of terrorists. I wasn't saying that openness breeds terrorism. I said it breeds bad behavior. So, and I'm asking the question. I'm not answering the question. I'm asking the question whether that is a necessary condition. Because on the street, we have the open street, and I have free speech in this country. I can say anything I want. But if I went out there spewing this, and as long as I didn't need my meds and I were just a hateful person, people would yell at me and scream at me, and they would.
Well, they do that on Twitter too, but it doesn't stop
my
you.
Behavior.
It doesn't stop you. I mean, if you're a troll or a bad person in comments or whatever.
People will yell back at you. What we say is don't feed the troll, ignore the troll, block the troll, right. Let the troll keep on doing whatever the troll wants to do. So what would the metaphor in Times Square would be? We would all just walk around this person screaming the horrid word. I don't think that would happen in New York.
I think that's what actually happens.
No, not New York. No.
Really?
I was walking across 44th Street today. Some bozo's all unhappy. He can't turn right. Light turns. He still tries to come in the intersection. I stand right in front of his ass. I point at him. I point at the traffic light like an a-hole New Yorker that I am and say, tough. Because he was violating the law, and by God, I stood up for that, and he was getting in the way.
To get run over.
Well, that's true, too. but you know, I had my norm moment right there.
I think the world is the world, and the open, closed, whatever. If you have gathering places for people, whether virtual or real, you're going to have bad behavior. The problem is that the norms have to be backed up by more than just goodwill, because goodwill isn't going to stop somebody who's actively negative, right?
No. You can have criminals in either case.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to ask is, and again,
that middle ground, a guy who's not a criminal, but just wants to act
bad
out.
Bad behavior. Does it breed bad behavior? Yeah.
So let's
say things.
There are people walk around in New York City naked. Nobody stops them.
Or just insulting people out of nowhere.
There's lots of people who do that, right?
You're fat. You're really ugly. You're fat, right? Yeah. That wouldn't happen unless there were meds needed in New York City. But it happens all over online,
right.
And there isn't that much shutting.
Because there's no friction. Yeah,
that's
you're right.
That's why it occurs. And our response, right? There's no friction. Our response is,
there's no consequences.
There's no consequences whatsoever.
Because you can't enforce the friction. It's a big difference if you say to me I'm fat on Times Square and I yell back at you. I'm right there. It doesn't matter if I yell at you on Twitter.
Question. So ergo, does openness digitally mean that we are stuck with bad behavior? We're stuck with one of two extremes. Either you're open and you have bad behavior, or you're controlled, whether it's by Facebook's control or Mike Elgin's control on Google+, and that's the only way you're going to have good behavior. Is that what we're stuck with? I hope not. I pray not. Because I like openness.
I don't know. I feel like the world is filled with bad behavior, Jeff, all the time. And if you wish, you can watch television news every night and get your stress level elevated.
No, because that's because television news over-amplifies isolated situations.
Well, so does Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure it's over-amplifying.
It's amplifying. Well, no, it is. Any broadcast medium is an amplifier.
Yeah, well, okay, that's fine.
I don't know. No, I think you're saying this is why we can't have nice things.
I want to, right. Which is the title of a book coming out, right? I think.
Yeah.
It just came out.
And yeah. which is, I think it's pretty much the same premise. And I think we can have nice things, and we just, people are people. They're going to be bad. They're going to be assholes. There always will be.
We deal with it better in real life. And so my question is, will we come up with ways to deal with it better digitally, or is that impossible?
Is that a logical impossibility? No, I'm sure we will. But there's no way we can eliminate it. There will be bad behavior. No.
Distancing. It's the separation. It's the distancing. You know, it's the lack of face to face, right? Like my wife is at her scariest, like when we're in the car. You know,
that's
like,
right.
When she gets upset.
That's right.
You know, road rage. I mean, things come out of her mouth. Scares me. 17 years we've been married. She scares me just in the car. And she'll say it. This is the place where I'm a complete a-hole.
Because
it's safer, and no one ever hears what she's saying. The windows are up. I mean, I say to her, why don't you? You know, when we're sitting next to the other car, why don't you roll down your car and say that? And no, I just got to get this out. And it's like that on Twitter and online. There's no consequence.
Yeah, but, you know, there may be people, in fact, I guess there probably are, who think one of us might be a horrible person online and would like to shut us down.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, I just saw it 2 seconds ago. I saw somebody. Somebody did a ridiculous screed against me. I'm not going to give them the attention. And out of nowhere, somebody in an organization I respect, I think has brains, just somebody says, oh, boy, isn't that fun? Who knows better? It's stupid. But that's the kind of our norm right now is to incur, not just to not create fiction, it's to grease the skids.
Right. Fight.
Yeah, exactly. So why does digital, I mean, what I'm hoping is, I hope the answer is, it was the same with the Telegraph, damn it. People, you know, had sex fantasies with dots and dashes. And then we figured it out and got used to it, and we figured out our norms. And same with cameras, and same with everything else. My hope is it'll be the same with online. I believe it will be. What I'm reaching for is assurance that there's a path to civility, even with openness.
But there's always going to be people who call in the SWAT squad on somebody, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not going to go away.
We'll never have complete harmony. We'll never have complete
friendliness of life.
I want it that way.
Life is full of irritants. If you don't want that, you should get a vat for yourself and a feed tube.
I often think about this from the tech perspective of, you know, if email is the one true open social network, anybody can send me a message if they have my email address, however, and they can say whatever they want, however they want.
Yeah.
But I have an email client that helps me control that experience. Right. I have spam filters and other, you know, filters that I've set up and other whatever.
But still stuff gets through.
Stuff gets through, sure. But this is the point, and no norms are protecting you.
That's just open.
Hold on. It's a really good point, Gina. Because I hardly ever get the kinds of insults in email that I do get on Twitter. Okay, now there's an obvious reason for that. On Twitter, I'm showing off for people.
Twitter's public.
I got an email just last week after the show. Somebody saying to me in the first line of the email, "I think you're a dick," and I did the email back. And I said, "Why would you think that I would read past that?" And I didn't.
Well, see, why do you even respond?
Why do you even respond to that? I don't know, but I said save your keystrokes and bile.
Yeah, my response to that is delete key.
But then you created no friction to bad behavior.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Well, then how do we ever get good behavior if you don't create friction to bad behavior?
I can pretty much guarantee you that responding to the guy does not help the situation.
I've had cases where I've called people on their behavior and they've apologized. Because what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to argue is, listen, if the person is a true dick, then there's no curing them. If they need their meds, that's for doctors to do.
Right.
But if what I'm saying is, if otherwise nice and intelligent people are acting like dicks online and are encouraged to do so, and there's no friction against that. In fact, there's greasing of their behavior in that case.
Right. That's a perverse positive feedback loop. Right. There's actually a positive feedback loop. Right. Right. We do get rewarded, especially in the performative sort of sphere where snark and, you know, quips and criticism actually kind of gets you more attention or, you know, attaboy or attagirls.
I guess it's true that the nature of Twitter promotes that kind of thing. That's probably true.
And I'm all I'm trying to ask is that necessary? Is that the end? Is there no hope other than Twitter deciding that it has to improve things before it brands and it starts killing stuff, which I'm not arguing for.
We've all called for Twitter to have better tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just tools to mute, but tools to block, ban.
Right, which is Gina's suggestion for this is trying to create a level of friction.
Yeah.
Right.
Make it so, or put it a different way. Gina's trying to suggest a way to disconnect the circuit of the feedback loop for some people. If they get less attention, if they know they get less attention, maybe they'll do it less.
In the real world, I will confront somebody, but in the digital world, I will not. I just delete it. It's easy enough to delete it. I don't have a lot of evidence that there's anything to do. By the way, I don't always do that. That's my policy. I often get, you know, steam comes in my ears and I respond. It's almost always a mistake. So I know what for me, and I'm not saying for anybody else, but for me, the right thing to do is hit the delete key or the block key. And
all I'm saying is, as a society, we're building a society online, and as a result of that, are we building a better society? And I wish we would.
I like it.
Yeah.
I you're right. But meanwhile, diaspora, there's nothing you can do. If terrorists want to use it, you're stuck.
Well, exactly. No, in their case, they're going to the proprietors and notifying them and asking them to take it down because there is a diaspora brand.
Yeah, but what you could do is just start your own pod, the ISIS pod.
It could, yes.
And run a server. And then, you know, you could try to shut people down. But that's part of the problem, by the way, is it's whack-a-mole. It's very hard on the internet to shut down speech.
Yeah, and ISIS is the ultimate troll.
Yeah, I mean, that talk about a troll. Yeah, that's
because there is no civility there. That's
right,
the point.
Right. So, societal norms are not an issue there.
No, no. And that rests out on we can't rule everything by the edge case. That's the problem with technopanic.
Right.
Is it takes the edge cases and tries to rule by them.
There's lots of middle ground where you could have some effect.
Right. So I guess my use case here is people who would never do this otherwise, who are decent, smart, civilized people, who either say something snarky or to me just as bad. I don't do that myself, but they yell fight, and they encourage and think it's funny.
So
they don't think of the feelings or impact on another human being. How do we appeal to that human nature of those people?
Just channel the Dalai Lama, whatever he would do. What about that? I mean, really, seriously, instead of yelling back at them.
You're asking how to encourage thoughtfulness given a tool that's built to be instantaneous, off the cuff, first thing that came to mind, right? I mean, there's a conflict between building a super usable, easy product, especially with Twitter, 140 characters directly from SMS, whatever, and asking smart people to think before they, you know, they react to something. It's tough. I mean, this is, you know, part of what we're doing at ThinkUp is like trying to get people to think about, you know,
what
the results of their actions.
That's what you're doing.
Networks.
Yeah, think about that.
It's a tough problem. I mean, mindfulness and thoughtfulness isn't really an easy sell, right?
But you're doing it in such a gentle, nice way. I didn't even think about that.
Positive feedback loop.
But we're sitting next to somebody who's really doing, who's actually doing something about it.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I hope so. If we can make it a fun enough consumer, what we're trying to do is sort of package the broccoli, you know, in a Snickers bar. I don't know how you want to put that, but I want to make it kind of a fun, delightful experience. But the core of it is, hey, think about what's going on here, and what you're, you know.
Is that what the purpose of ThinkUp was?
Yeah, absolutely. Making your time online more meaningful. We all spend this time online. Wow. We all spend our attention in certain ways, right? And are they making our lives better? Are they making other people's lives better? Are we using these platforms the best way that we can? And it's absolutely that from the very beginning.
So what are the insights? Give us kind of the story behind on some of the insights that you offer and how you think that is a – I know it is, but I want to hear your rationale, your logical steps – on when you chose what insights to create.
Yeah, we can look at my ThinkUp if you want. I got it up here.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, it's incredibly...
mine, I would say how often I use the F word.
But so you reward me for certain tweets. You say this got a lot of retweets and favorites. That means it's good. I want to do more of that behavior.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, so this is extremely difficult to quantify. It's extremely difficult to quantify thoughtfulness and meaningfulness, right? Because that's such a subjective thing. But yeah, part of what we do with ThinkUp is let you know, how are people reacting to this? Are they liking it? Are they amplifying it? Are they replying to it?
Right. Well, when I did something bad, if you're saying, hey, Jarvis, a lot of people retweeted that. Are you sure you like that?
yeah, and that's part of the challenge, right? Because if you mention, if you got meat.
Oh dear.
In that case, you retweeted someone and you got their message out to a bunch more people because you've got a bigger audience than that person.
Thanks a friggin' lot, Leo.
No, you see what happened there.
Yeah.
He followed me. I don't have any control over that.
I didn't even look. I saw it go by. Okay.
Yeah, no, he followed me. I don't. What can I do? I'm lovable.
Right. So when it says that I replied to Henry Blodgett 10 times last week, it's saying that we had a real conversation. And that's a good thing.
Yes. Yes. And again, this is a really hard problem, and just even kind of wording our headlines and commentary about whatever happened. The point is to sort of bring a kind of thoughtfulness to it. What do people react to? Who's following you? That kind of thing.
Because I've for the last week, as I said last week, I wasn't going off Twitter, but I've really tried to pull back, and I'm doing the Dr. Strangelove thing on certain conversations. I might have a smart ass line. I might have something to say, and I just say, nope, not going to do it. I got a lot of replies to what I said. As a laptop using 6'4" frequent flyer, I sit in trapped solidarity with victims of seat back recliners. So you know what I have to say about that topic, and it caused discussion. The discussion, there were a few trollish comments, but most all in all, it was an honest.
You know, that's one way.
Interchange.
One way to foster the kind of behavior you want online is to reward the good behavior, not merely to punish the bad behavior, but
absolutely
have a wonderful conversation. And people look at that and go, oh, you look, if you don't just snark at them, you can actually have a good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way.
So Facebook gets crap for trying to have a pleasant environment. They might do it clumsily. They might do it badly. But it is truly a social environment, a Thanksgiving table. That's what they're trying to be. That's why the Pew study was off, I think. Right? And you could say it's too controlled. Mom never lets us really talk. She always gets mad if we start to argue about anything. We can't talk politics at home. It's no fun here. You could say all that stuff, and it can be perfectly legitimate complaint against Facebook. But that's what Facebook is. Yeah. It's not an open platform.
This tweet got 22 replies. Wow. This is a Casper mattress, $900. Packers blanket, $50. Fort made from Casper mattress box, priceless.
That was a great one. Actually, that made me really happy.
Credit to that to Lisa. That's her joke, but that's her son in the Casper box.
I love Ozzy's confused look.
And he's going, what? Hey, let's take it. This is a good conversation. As always, this show is full of them, and I'm full of it. So thank you. Let's take a break. We're going to get your picks. What do you think of Tent, by the way? Is that anything interesting there? Have you seen that, Gina?
Tent.io? No, what's Tent?
Tent.io. This is more of the – I think this is more of the stuff Kevin Marks was talking about, which is getting your data localized. And this is kind of what you were talking about, federating communications, a protocol for personal data and communications. So you could federate your social media, federate your blog posts, things like that. I think there may be a technological solution we could find somewhere out there.
Yeah, but the user experience has to be.
Yeah, this is, can you run MongoDB on your PHP 5.4 Apache stack?
Just spin up an EC2 instance.
No set. No sweat.
Modules, and then just have this database, and then you're good to go. Just SSH into the server and start it up, and you'll be good.
I wish the world were full of people who knew how to do that. That would be a good world.
It'd be a different world.
Well, it'd be different. But I like those people. That's how I got into this, you know, is that I just like geeks. And I feel comfortable with geeks. And I want to talk about SSH and lab stacks. What else I want to talk about? This. Look at this. Look at this little box. This little box could change your world. This can mean that your printer, no matter what, even a USB printer that's not on the network, suddenly is not only a network printer, but a Google Cloud Print compatible network printer. You could print to your, you know, 5-year-old USB printer that never even heard the word, you know, Wi-Fi from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, a Kindle Fire. This is the Lantronix X-Print server. And what it does, it will take any printer, almost any printer, about 4,000 top brand printers, and turn it into a network printer that is compatible with Google for Cloud Print and Android printing. It's very easy, too. There's no software to install anywhere. There's no upgrade. You just take it out of the box, plug it in, and you're printing. There is a web interface if you want to do advanced configuration, but I can almost promise you won't need to. One X-Print server can support multiple printers and virtually unlimited Android devices. It's $149.95. They also make an AirPrint version, but this is the Cloud Print version. And it supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers all at the same time. It's got one USB port, but you just could put a hub on there and you can just plug 8 printers into it. You want to know more? XPrintServer.com/twit. And if you use the offer code TWIT, you'll get free shipping on your order. We the folks at Lantronix have been selling a lot of these because it's such a great idea. And if you compare it with other print servers, it's a very affordable price. And the idea that it gives you Google Cloud Print, I don't know if you've ever used Google Cloud Print, but it means I can print to my printer at home anywhere I am if I can get online. It is awesome. XPrintServer.com/twit. And the offer code is TWIT from Lantronix, the XPrint server. Really cool stuff.
Let me add something to that, Leo, if I may, because yes. I have my cloud life, and I use Google Cloud Print, and I bought a new printer because I wanted other functionality, like scanning to my Google Docs, 3640, but it goes to sleep. And so even for a certified Google Cloud Print printer, I need the Lantronix because it'll wake it up when I'm off somewhere a week not printing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh.
But even with the cloud printer, Lantronix is helpful because it's always awake for me on my network at home.
That's awesome. And having a network printer is so nice because it means you don't have to put it next to the computer. You could put it in a closet or somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Before we get to the tip, tool, and pick of the week, did you know? See this Recode is now saying we're going to do native advertising?
My tweet was @Recode.
Does this mean that they're struggling, or does it just what does it mean?
No, it probably means that advertisers are saying, why don't you play along? Why don't you do this too?
God, you know, of course advertisers are saying this. Careful. From the day I started doing whatever I do, people have come along and said, hey, would you mind if we did a show about our product? And I've always said, no, what are you, crazy? We do ads. If you want to buy an ad, you could buy an ad, but I'm not going to do content that looks like it's editorial. But it's advertisements. Advertorial. That's what they used to call it.
I'm sure that the two of them will make sure it's labeled well and all that.
It is.
You know, here's the large... I don't know if we talked about this. I guess we talked about big world issues last week. But Ethan Zuckerman, who's a brilliant guy at MIT Media Lab, and one of the founders of... Oh, crap. Homepage maker company. It'll occur to me in a minute.
Excite?
No. Earlier than that.
Tripod.
Tripod. Thank you very much. Who needs memory when you have Google and Leo, and a chat room? So Ethan wrote a piece in the Atlantic 2 weeks ago, I think it was, saying that accepting advertising on the web was the web's original sin. And usually it said that the original sin of the web was giving away content for free. So here was a sin matching a sin. And I disagreed with Ethan respectfully because he's brilliant, and it's a really smart piece. And I wrote a blog post in response. But here's the nub of my view of this is, we haven't begun to innovate with advertising at all. The only innovations we've seen so far are basically computerizing the processes we already have of buying mass advertising message opportunities, and creating pop-ups, which, by the way, Ethan is responsible for having helped create pop-ups.
Oh, yeah, he wrote that article, yeah.
Yeah, and he's sorry. And so it's going to sound odd coming from a journalism prof, but we need to innovate in advertising. We need to find truly new ways for companies to market and hope that, by the way, that media is part of that new method. And advertising agencies aren't going to do it because they sell the old stuff, and advertisers aren't going to do it, and media companies haven't been doing it, but we have to rethink advertising, because if it doesn't work and if it collapses and dies, then media goes with it, and we need its support. So I was sad. That's why I was sad to see Recode take the, you know, jump on the bandwagon, and I'm not blaming them for it. I bet the advertisers forced them to and said, we've got a RFP here, and we want you to run these things, and they probably had a staff meeting and said, let's figure out how to do it, you know, as best we can. But it's an old advertorial, stupid, let's fool the reader model, and we've got to go move past that. And where are the innovators in advertising? I don't see them yet.
So here's what Recode does. Normally, there's a black banner on the content, but sponsor content will have a blue banner that says sponsor content. And what Walt Mossberg says in his article about this is, hey, don't ignore those. Those are going to be great articles, full of good material. It's just written by a sponsor.
Yeah, just not one of our journalists.
Yeah. And they're also saying, we're not going to try to trick you. We're going to make it very clear that it's sponsored content.
And we're not going to have our journalists write them, which some places.
Both things are very important. But your point about Forbes, and you never know whether you're going to reshare a link that you see from Forbes on Twitter, because you never know if it's real journalism or sponsored content. That's going to be true on Recode, unless they've got some way of indicating on Twitter. And what, so it devalues their links.
In a link, if you link to something on Twitter and you say I saw this on Forbes, Twitter is going to truncate. Even if you put a clue in the URL, as the New York Times does, it says paidpost.nytimes.com. Well, it gets truncated. It's gone.
Right. I will shut this place down if we ever can't survive without doing that. That's not ever going to happen. Ever. Gina Trapani. You must have a tip for us.
I do. This was for fellow Chromecast lovers, such as myself. I still have been living in New York 8 months now. I still haven't unpacked any other. There's just the Chromecast plugged into my TV at this point. I'm just too lazy or something. Two new apps on Android and iOS added Chromecast support. Watch ABC, which surprised me. I mean, does like the official ABC app really want you to get them? They do now. And
they didn't used to. They used to not like, I mean, wasn't
they
it
used
all
to, like go out of their way it. To block it. Yeah, so when Google TV came out right. and it was like, hey, watch your web browser on TV, they like the ABC.com would detect, are you on Google TV, and block the content. It would say not supported on your device. Well, now we've seen them come total 180. Now you can cast Bachelors in Paradise. Right directly to your podcast.
Wait a
podcast.
Minute. I'm not going to let you skim by that.
Gina, we find out about your TV tastes every week, and it becomes shocking.
She's got kind of
deeper into it.
I'm proud of my diversity. Kardashians, MMA,
you
Glee,
like trash TV.
Bachelor. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen,
what is your worst TV confession?
The Bachelor, franchise is definitely the worst.
Or the day she watched all of the Kardashian.
Yes,
the Kardashians. I'll actually defend.
She binge watched the Kardashians. That's as bad as
watching 5 minutes is bad enough. But.
We found out when Steve Ballmer left Microsoft, he binge watched 100 episodes of The Good Wife in 2 weeks. Oh,
the Good Wife is a great show.
Though. I know, but 2 weeks, 100 episodes.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
I don't feel so bad about playing Diablo for 9 hours last night.
Listen, once the baby goes to sleep, I get to do whatever I want. And if it's the Bachelor in Paradise, that's
you
what it is.
You earned it, baby.
Is this something you watch with your wife? Not to bring her into the snare
no.
here.
No, she judges me so hard.
Oh, interesting.
She can't even. I have to sort of do it around her schedule. I mean, right now there's very little TV on. She and I are watching Orphan Black together.
Okay.
But when I get the TV alone or the tablet or the
You're
or the,
sneaking
or the phone,
it, aren't you?
I'm sneaking the Kardashians The Bachelor. Yeah. She actually questions being in my presence during that though. That
wow.
She's not very judgy, but. And not in this case, she makes an exception.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's justified.
It's justified. So thank you. What was the tip? I forgot.
Watch Chromecast.
Oh, you said another one. What else?
NPR One.
Oh, I love NPR One.
Much better suited to public intellectuals. NPR One also now has Chromecast support.
So The Bachelor or NPR? What's your
The Bachelor or NPR? It's the whole spectrum, guys.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the most important moments in the history of TV's switch to digital was when ABC, it was ABC again, decided to stream Desperate Housewives the morning after. And that was saying to every single affiliate, to heck with you, every man for himself.
Yeah.
And we gotta go with this new thing. Sorry, I know we're screwing you, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, TV networks are highly pragmatic. And that's why I think that's really interesting. You should point that out, Gina, that ABC wasn't playing along before. And the fact that they are now says a lot about over the top.
Wow. It does. Now, let me just say, the experience isn't great. You still have to sign in with your cable provider.
Of course.
You still have to go through the ads, which I'm actually fine with the ads. But, you know, it's not your Netflix or your Hulu even. But it's something, right? So there you go. It's baby steps. Chromecast.
Jeff, do you have a number for
us? Yeah, it was kind of a quiet week, but the one I came up with was that Google's mobile search revenue last year was $8 billion. And you know, the rest of media all say that you can't make any money on mobile, but somehow Google does.
$8 billion compared to how much they make on the rest of it?
I think it's like, was it $30 billion last year?
Okay, so that's like a third.
I mean, it's a good chunk.
Yeah.
And they figure out how to make it work.
It has to. I mean, otherwise, mobile is where everybody's going.
Yeah.
Desktop advertising doesn't matter. So both Facebook and Google seem to have licked it.
Yep. We haven't in media. I still hear media companies say, I don't know what to do.
My tool is a tool you all know, but it's dropped its price considerably. We thought it might when we heard that Google was dropping the cost of Google Drive and Microsoft dropping the cost of Microsoft OneDrive and Flickr offering a terabyte of storage for free. Dropbox, which, of course, is in the, you know, solely in the business of storage, is now a terabyte for its $10 a month. It used to be 100 megabytes. In fact, when I saw what Google Drive was also a comparable price, when I saw they did that, I thought, that kills Dropbox. Well, they're hanging in there. But as Paul Thurrott pointed out, today on Windows Weekly, it's tough for Dropbox because that's their business. For Google and Microsoft, it's just a sideline.
But you know, Lee, I was thinking about this. I wonder how many people hit, what was 100 megs before?
Oh, yeah. Nobody needs all that storage.
That's the thing. I'm not sure that they're, you know, what's the incremental bit of those who did the upsell?
Not 100 megs, by the way. 100 gigs. I apologize.
I mean, 100 gigs. Yeah. 100 gigs. Sorry.
No, I said 100 megs, too.
100 gigs. So how many people are they losing who were doing what's the opposite of an upsell, an up-buy, above the 100 gig?
Maybe people weren't moving over because, after all, Dropbox is tied into things like To-Do Text and other apps on your phone in ways that these other solutions aren't. But new buyers are going to be less likely to go to Dropbox when they've already got a terabyte from Google Drive or somebody like that. I think the falling price of hard drives is part of the engine of this.
What's a hard drive?
Definitely.
I wouldn't know myself.
Shut up. But that's because you have hard drives in the sky. Your stuff's still on hard drives, Jeff.
I do.
All kinds of
drives. I just read that. Have you heard about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot?
The book?
The book.
I just ordered it on Audible. I can't wait. Is it good?
I listened to it on Audible, and it's and the performance is great.
Can't wait.
The book is you're going to love it.
I can't wait.
But one of the little it's not very sci-fi ish, but one of the little sci-fi tricks is that the computers in it are organic.
Ah.
Which really starts to make you think of interesting ways that we presume that there's these hard elements making things. And just kind of it's a throwaway. I'm not spoiling anything.
It's a techno thriller, Gina.
Oh, yeah. This looks amazing. I'm reading the Amazon listing here. This sounds great.
It's very good. And it's somewhat dystopian about publicness and privacy and data and all that kind of stuff, I enjoy the hell out of it. It's wonderfully written. It's just word choices and little phrase, turns of phrase that are just delightful throughout.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It is what it is. But the characters are good, and the writing and the performance in the audiobook is excellent.
And the hero is named Leo, so I gotta like that.
There you go.
He's a slacker hero. An unhinged trustafarian. What's a trustafarian?
Trust fund.
Oh, trustafarian. I get it.
He's a flinty trustafarian.
He's a flinty trustafarian. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot by David Schaefer. Yeah, I saw the New York Times article. A review which said it's probably the book of the summer, so I immediately got it on Audible, and it's probably my next Audible book. And that was not an Audible ad, nor was it native advertising.
Neither.
Somebody said, Leo, you do native advertising every time you do an Audible ad because you have book picks. That's different. That's an ad in which content has been inserted, not content in which an ad has been inserted. It's exactly the opposite of native advertising.
Well, I mean, in some fairness, radio host-read spots are, in a sense, what native advertising wants to be because they want to be in the voice.
Right.
But a good radio pro like you changes your voice. Now it's time to talk about
our voice. Yeah, you know it's an ad.
And you, right. Well, you're saying it outright, and you're giving every possible signal that you can.
I try not to make it, But I do have to do the ads because there's no one else to do them for me.
and the only issue is anyone confused? No one. If you sat down and quizzed anyone who watches the show or listens to the show, even listens without the visual cues that you have on the screen, I don't think you would have anyone who'd be confused about whether or not this has turned into This Week in Mattresses.
And one of the things we do is we make sure that people like Jeff and Gina, the co-hosts who are on all of our shows, are never asked to read ads. The ads are read by staff.
Yeah, and
staff
I actually
announcers.
Probably violate the rule when I toss in and say something about the
principal.
Well,
server. I'm not going to stop
it's
you.
Not my rule.
I ain't going to stop you, but we never would ever require you or ask you to. Furthermore, we often ask our hosts whether they'd be okay with that ad. I say often because I realize that we never asked you if you have a problem with Casper mattresses, but I don't think you do.
Well, I think you're the one who has a problem with sleep.
I do. I didn't. 2:30 a.m.
You stay up, and then because then you know you're dreading going home to your pillow.
Because I have such an uncomfortable buckwheat pillow waiting for me. No, I was using the buckwheat pillow during my 9-hour marathon.
I don't want to know what you were doing with it.
No, I'm kind of with you. In fact, when we first started doing ads on this network, a lot of people outside the U.S. who were not used to that kind of host read ad were kind of upset. Because hosts in the, for instance, the UK never read ads,
also because most of the stations there are government run, and so
they don't have ads at all.
Have it.
Yeah, but in fact, frankly, it's because there was no one else. I had to read the ad, and none of our advertisers have radio ads or TV ads. So I just had to read the ad.
Well, that would so not work on this network to throw on a 30.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be more of an interruption than what we do, even though it'd be quicker.
I can see it being an interruption. Do you ever get requests to use an advertiser's 30s?
I'd be glad to if they asked me to.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever asked us. Of course, they far prefer the native advertising.
Yeah.
Now I'm feeling guilty.
No.
I just want to be able to pay the rent, eat dinner, and go shopping. I just want to live.
Please. Play little video games.
Play video games. Hey, it's $60. There's no, you know, those are expensive video games.
You got to pay your Comcast bill.
I just paid two, not one, but two college tuitions.
Ooh.
That's fun.
I got that ready for next year. Yeah.
That's fun. That's going to go on for 3 more years.
Yeah, you thought it was going to be syncopated, didn't you?
Yeah, it should have been syncopated, but sucker. Abby took time off, and now I'm screwed. They're actually now the same year. They're both sophomores.
And the cost goes up, too. That's the other good
thing.
What? I'm just looking at the prices. There was some school that Jake looked at some time ago where, and I forget which one it was, but if you got accepted, they froze the tuition.
I like that.
That would have been cool, yeah.
4 years and out. That school is now out of business, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Jarvis is a professor at a school that teaches people how to be good citizens of City University of New York. His office is there on Times Square, and we are really glad to have him as part of the show, the last public intellectual.
No, don't say that. I make no such claim.
He writes ever, books, ladies and gentlemen.
Ever. I'm a schmuck and a schlub.
He blogs. He meets with presidents, world leaders. He goes to the World Economic Forum in Davos.
Here.
What more could you ask for? Gina Trapani and I are public geeks. I'm proud to be a public geek.
You are a public geek.
I'm a very
good You're amazing, Leo. You're on. See, I have to sit in front of my webcam like a couple hours a week, but you're just out there all the time.
You know what? The best part about my job is I get to talk with people like you, and so it's not hard. It's fun. It's like sitting down. I arranged my life so that I would get to sit down and talk to really great people about really interesting stuff for hours a day.
Have a good chat.
Wow. How did that happen?
It's good. We're pretty lucky.
Yeah, we are. Gina Trapani is, of course, at ThinkUp, and you must go and get your free trial available now at thinkup.com.
Doo-doo-doo.
It makes you a better tweeter.
Yeah.
A better Facebooker.
We're doing our job. It does. Sure. Yeah.
I had no idea that was kind of the thinking, but you're absolutely right. It does.
You're absolutely right. I get it fully now. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it's the disconnect between what analytics are and what they should do. And we're definitely struggling with it. I mean, we're trying our best and we're just at the beginning stages. But yeah, that's the idea.
But of course, it's Anil Dash and Gina Trapani. Of course, it's going to be like a good thing.
Why didn't I see this?
Of course.
They're trying to take over the world and improve it. Of course they are.
Would you get Anil on this show sometime?
He would love, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, in fact, he tweeted about that this week, that people were saying, Anil, you should be able to more shows, and he mentioned Twig and how we like to disagree with him, which I'm going to disagree with you on that, Anil.
We don't like to disagree with you.
Stop that.
Yes. Chad, make a note. Next week, let's see if we can get Anil on.
Yeah, I would love to have him on. I didn't really push for it because, you know, he's my business partner, and I didn't want to kind of overrun the joint with...
I've known Anil for ages, as I think most people in the business have. Yeah. I met him first when he was working for
Six Apart.
And I used Vox, their kind of the consumer version, but I also used the, in fact, before it even came out, their blog platform, which is escaping me now, TypePad.
TypePad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they lived in Petaluma, you know, they were local.
Yeah. You know, I thought of the Christmas present you can get a Neil now.
What's that?
What's that?
A love story in dots and dashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben nice. And Mina Trott. There's the names I was looking for.
Yes. Oh, right. Ben and Mina.
Ben and Mina.
I didn't realize they ever lived in
Petaluma. They lived in Petaluma.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
And I was an early beta user of TypePad. I love TypePad.
Wow. Yeah, we'll get Anil on. I would love to have him on.
Good.
You're a lot of fun.
Good. All right. Thanks, Gina. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do This Week in Google. It's my last show of the week. This is my Friday night.
Good for you.
Yeah. 1 p.m. Pacific.
Play some video games. Yeah.
You got it, baby.
He's heading for the Casper mattress before you know.
I got the mattress in front of the TV, the joysticks all fired up. I got my big gulp, my hot pockets. I'm ready.
One question. Home after 23 hours straight of game playing. What does Lisa say?
She was fast asleep. We haven't spoken since
then. What did she say today? So you got home. You did what?
I didn't get home. I was at home. I was in my office playing. I was home.
You come upstairs. The next day, she says, where were you?
No. She knows what I was doing.
Did she laugh?
No, she came at about 9 o'clock. She said, well, so are you going to play this all evening? And I said, yeah. I said, do you want to watch something we can watch? She said, no, that's fine. I just wanted to check in. And what did you do? You watched. We have like 18 TVs. It's not like.
I know, but does she think you're nuts?
Do you think I'm nuts?
No. That's love.
She loves me, and she knows. And I don't do this all the time. I'm not like a hardcore gamer. Once in a while, once a year, once every 2 years, there's a really good game. It turns out this game I played all the way through on the PC, but I really like it on the console. The last one was BioShock Infinite. It's only once in a while. Most games I get them, and I don't like them that much, and I play a little like Watch Dogs. I thought it was going to be great. So I'm not a big-time gamer. But every once in a while, I don't know if it has to do with my life situation or the game. I think it's more the game. I just get into a game and I play it all the way to the end, and then that's done. And my thumbs stop working, and I'm done, and I don't play anymore until next time. I should stream it on Twitch.
You should.
Yeah, you should. Oh, you'd be.
That's
why
I thought you were going to say you did. I was. Yeah. Sure
it's built into the Xbox One. I could.
You should have. Jesus, Leo.
Oh, okay, I'll do that tonight.
Next time.
Next time.
Oh, you still got some more in yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm not done yet. I just created Diablo. Just Diablo just took over. There's a big twist in this game, and the big twist just happened. And now I'm going to play. And I'm going to try to be funny while I'm playing. Do voices.
Watch. This is Gina, I think we just unemployed ourselves.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, I kick myself every moment, because we did this a little bit when the last one I really liked.
Skyrim.
Skyrim came out. I love Skyrim. Mm-hmm. And we broadcast it live, and it was so much fun. Brian Brushwood inspired me, because he does the same thing. And if I had just known this was going to be the next big thing, I would have fired you all and just done that.
And hired a couple of gamers with some personality.
Yeah. What was I thinking?
We're good looking.
Talking about intellectual stuff. Nobody wants that.
I think that was the most oxymoronic thing you've ever said, Gina. That was a triple oxymoron. Gamers with personalities were good looking.
Man, shots fired. That's not good.
And he wonders why people are mean to him on Twitter.
People should have a little something. I'm sorry. I feel left out, people. I'm sad.
Actually, you know what happens at 11 p.m. tonight? BioShock comes out, the original BioShock on the iPad. I might be doing that instead. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this show in between video games, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. Every Wednesday on Twitch, and I hope you'll watch live if you can't. On-demand audio and video made available after the fact, twit.tv/twig. And, you know, all the podcast platforms and Stitcher and iTunes and all that stuff. And, you know, somebody said, well, you never mention Instacast or Downcast all of them. All of those. I encourage you to subscribe because, you know what, this is our Big Thinkers show. This is a show where we learn, we discuss, we talk. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.